Thanks for tuning in to the Roundtable Podcast, episode 20.
Hello, everybody. I'm Brian Humphrey.
And I'm Dave Robison.
And you're listening to the Roundtable Podcast.
On the Roundtable Prod...
What's a prod?
What the hell's a podcast? And we don't want to be there for it.
Nope.
On the Roundtable Podcast... Brian and I invite writers to come onto the show and pitch story ideas to us and our esteemed guest host.
And then we sink our teeth into it and dig deep, talking about what works, what doesn't work, kick around some ideas, try to fine-tune it until we get a solid and writable story and what Dave likes to call...
literary gold, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
See, and we got to do boom, chicka, wow, wow. Maybe it is a podcast. I don't know.
Oh.
Just saying. Dude, I just, it is officially summertime here in Tennessee.
Yes, it is. Yep.
No, there's a reason. There's an event that occurs.
What has signified that it is officially summertime?
Terry came home from running errands this morning, and she put into my hands a Sonic watermelon cream slush.
What the hell? Oh, yeah, okay, I know what that is.
You know what I'm talking about.
Oh,
that,
I do know what
that is. The juice of every summer in a styrofoam cup.
It's ambrosia.
With a dollop of whipped cream on top, and you just draw that into your mouth, and it's like, yes, it's summertime. Mm-hmm. So it has officially begun.
Most definitely.
We have arrived, and the peas are growing, the cantaloupe is up, the acorn squash is rising.
I want a picture of this garden.
Oh, dude, I will so totally put that up. We haven't introduced you. You are not on the show yet.
I'll go back in my cave.
But as though a voice from the ether called down, yes, I will definitely put a picture up. Yes. You know what I'll do? I'll do a post on the blog about how creativity is like a garden. And I actually have some stuff I can riff on this. So I will.
And Dave and Terry's gardens are epic.
Yes, so this is true.
And will be worth it.
If you friend me on Facebook, you'll have access to my albums, and you can see the full scope of awesomeness that we cultivate in the earth here at Tennessee.
Oh, I will.
And speaking of the scope of awesomeness, not a bad segue.
Yes.
I'd give that about a 6 or 7 on my segue scales.
Oh, well, you're much kinder than I
am. Brian Humphrey, the man who keeps me honest. Let's jetty off to Coolsville. And by Coolsville, I mean introducing our guest host. Ladies and gents, you know him. You love him. He's that lovable Canadian who comes in and provides not only awesome fiction, but a sensibility and an intuition to the craft that really we find inspiring. Please welcome back to the Skype line your friend and mine, John Miro. John, welcome back to the roundtable. Take that big chair over there, because that one's yours, baby.
Ah, the wingback chair. Let me get my smoking jacket on and my Canadian Tim Hortons donut, and I'm ready to reign.
Wait, what, Tim Hortons donut? What is this?
Tim Hortons is the national pastime of our country. Tim Hortons coffee. Tim Horton was a hockey player. So, of course,
what a shock.
Retired and started a chain of restaurants.
See, now in Canada, they open a chain of restaurants. In America, they open car dealerships.
I'd rather, you know, get a donut than a
I was gonna
car
say,
salesman.
Mm-hmm. I like the Canadian vibe. I like the way you guys rock that. John, the last huge news that we got from you was the wildly successful crowdfunding for Enemy Lines Book 1 and the noshing of that hideous pepper that among the podcasting community I think went viral. So you've got that behind you. What is coming up on the John Miro playlist? When we hit play, what's next, man?
Well, I've just finished Tools and Means.
Yes.
Oh, yes. About a very nice man.
Oh, no. It was like, it's like Dexter meets V, man. It's like, holy crap.
Thank you.
Yeah.
No, I like to hear that. I'm not that Canadian. I've just finished that, and now I'm in edits for Pyre, the sequel to Asunder.
Thank you, finally.
Yes. Which will be out later this summer. I'm taking a short hiatus after several back-to-back podcasts to get my ducks in the row for the next three, I'm also working on putting together something else. It's kind of under wraps, but hopefully it will involve some other podcasters and some other independent ebook creators' voices in a setting I'm creating. And of course, we'll have more enemy lines.
Yes, absolutely. Bring it. Bring it. So
nothing much for me.
No. You're sitting around playing Mass Effect, aren't you? But dude, that sounds awesome. Can you give us anything else about this secret project that you can't talk about?
Well, I can't talk about it. what I'm doing is I've got two more universes that I have yet to even mention in a podcast.
Okay.
And those are going to be put on the shelf for a possible talk to an editor who will take a look at one for maybe going the dinosaur route of traditional publishing. But my bread is buttered by the people that, while it wasn't massively successful, was crowdfunding. Successfully, my first novel, Enemy Lines. So I'm going to have another world completely just for those people that will be crowdfunded in another about year, 10 months from now.
Okay. Okay.
But in the meantime, because I want a little time to make sure that what I put out is quality, and I do have a lot of irons in the fire.
Yes, you do.
I'm going to take a couple, 6 to 8 weeks before Pyre launches, maybe less, and I'm setting up a universe for people to write in that is brand new. It's a science fiction universe that has never been uttered a word of in the podcast community or any Kindle or any other ebook format.
Sweet.
And it's hopefully going to have several or more other authors playing in my playground. Inspired by a certain miscreant by the name of Sigler, who teased the world with the crew of the crypt.
Ah, excellent. So, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I didn't want you to give away too much.
Shit, you didn't mean to.
Good point. I'm a ruthless journalist in this respect. What do we have? Do we have a possible maybe a press release date when more details will come out for that?
Well, we'll see.
Okay. All right. Enough probing.
Authors, I don't want to put anybody's name down.
That's cool. That's totally cool. Nope.
So this is a that would be a podcast. I was thinking probecast.
Probecast. Oh man, we totally need to get off that riff before we start workshopping the story.
I'm afraid to turn my back on my microphone if we keep this.
Okay. Well, on that note, gentlemen, John, it sounds like you got some amazing stuff out there. What we can put up in the liner notes, we will. And we'll certainly try and enhance the tease factor on this secret project that you've got coming up. That sounds freaking awesome.
Thank you, sir.
But for now, let's take a break. Let's do a promotional pause for another awesome podcast or audiobook that's out there in the podosphere. And when we get back, let's workshop some story action. What do you say?
Let's do it.
I think it sounds brilliant.
I like it too. All right, friends, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is Christoph Laputka, author and creator of the Leviathan Chronicles. Do you want to learn how to make your own audio drama?
The best thing about the whole process is that nobody appreciates it but us.
You're not singing and you're not in a band, then you should not be using a mic that's too good because it picks up
everything, right?
Everything, yeah. Right.
Do you want to learn more about directing voice actors?
For me, it is a performance, and I appreciate it when somebody else delivers a performance and recognizes that this is some kind of art form and not just something that we're doing as a little community to get stories out there.
Do you want to take your podcast to the next level?
Well, this is supposed to be a superior way to do it. It's just that if you're using the kind of free software that's available for a PC... you probably haven't done this before because it's not really convenient to do
something. Mm-hmm. But most people don't realize that you release under a non-com, no derivatives license. That doesn't mean that you can't then take what you did and go not just publish a book, but adapt it for the screen.
Hmm.
Or sell the podcast that you've recorded to the BBC for broadcast in another country.
Mm-hmm.
Then you need to tune in to the Full Cast Podcast with Brian Lincoln and Abigail Hilton. The best place to get information on the production and assembly of great podcasts and great audio drama.
I mean, talking to you guys, everyone I talk to, I feel like I've learned something from. Everyone's got their strengths and backgrounds. Different people have a background in music or in film or, you know, I'm in science, so maybe I would be the kind of person that might try to actually design some sort of a noise reduction filter from raw code. Not that I have, but...
Tune in to the Fullcast Podcast.
Our website is fullcastpodcast.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gents, to the Roundtable Podcast. We have an excellent, excellent story to bring to you today, so let's just jump into it. Dave, who do we got?
Oh, yes. Our guest writer for this episode of the Roundtable Podcast is actually a fellow countryman of our guest host. He is he hails from the Great White North. He's a writer of short fiction and has appeared on the New Fiction Writers Podcast, which he co-hosts with the incomparable Tony Whitford. So if you tune into that podcast, and friends, I do recommend you do. They recently did a very cool reading of an Ernest Hemingway piece. They do new fiction, old fiction, and it's just, there's a nice aesthetic that they have going on over there. Again, that's New Fiction Writers Podcast. So, friends, welcome to the Skype line. Our guest writer for this episode, Mr. Jay Langjans. Jay, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, and thank you for stepping up and tossing a story on the table. We greatly appreciate that.
Oh, no problem. I need some help.
Yeah, and we're here to give it, baby. So Jay, what do you do? Where are you from? Well, we know where you're from. You're from Canada. But where in Canada, and how did you get into writing, bud?
Okay, well, I've always tried to be a writer. I've always written short stories and such. But after my kids were born and my wife went back to work, I had a lot of nights where I couldn't leave the house or do anything. So I got a laptop and just started writing. And the more I wrote, the easier it became, and the more content I started to produce.
Very cool.
For professionally, I estimate heating and air conditioning in office commercial towers downtown. And that keeps me extremely busy. And on the side, I'm working on becoming a voice actor and trying to get a podcast novel put together and out for everybody to listen to.
Wow. Awesome. Dude, you've got some shit on your plate, too.
Yeah. Awesome. Too much.
It's too much is never enough.
Oh, yeah.
To quote Mick Jagger from the MTV days. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I just dated myself profoundly.
Don't worry. Everything old is new again. Give it five weeks, it'll be like a right. Burger King commercial.
I'm retro. Yay. All right. Well, Jay, you did bring a story to the table, so by all means, let's dig into that. We give you 5 to 8 minutes. Give us title, genre, format, setting, characters, and a story arc to chew on, and we'll take it from there. So for now, the mic is yours, my friend.
All right. The story that I am attempting to create is called MP4, The Nautilus Project. That's sort of a working title, but I like it. The genre is sci-fi, young adult. The format's just going to be a single novel. I don't intend to expand the world from there. The hook line is it's BioShock meets The Matrix, underwater with behind the scenes. You don't know what's going on. The setting. In the safe haven known as MP4, people survive. They are all alone and deep beneath the ocean surface. Their home burrows deep into the Earth's crust and is topped with a vast impenetrable structure, superstructure. It was one of 20 such complexes built as a last resort, with the Earth's weather system in turmoil and the once grand expanse of the former terra firma either underwater or a wasteland. There is nowhere else to go, and there was nowhere else to go. Within MP4, life has changed. The last 2,500 years, man has changed. At first, life in the dome was full of wonder, discoveries, and inventions. Automation was perfected and made totally tamper-proof. Life in the dome was a harmony of great minds. The brightest of the bright fled to the Nautilus Project's domes. But after the first generation passed on and it became apparent that the people could not live more than 30 to 45 years under the kinds of pressures that they were subjected to, life began to devolve. The first thing that happened was the population control board was set up to try and stave off the coming overpopulation problem. People dug as deep as they could, but eventually they knew they would run out of space. This was met with violence and civil war, which eventually broke out, and the end result was the separation of the dome into two sides. Bulkheads and access points became no man's land, and thus began what is now here today. Our main character is Ava Gills. She's a young, impulsive girl. She's learning patience now. She didn't have it before. She's got a history of being in a lot of trouble, but since she's found her mentor, she is now a new direction. She's got a goal. She wants to get to the surface. She's applied that anarchy stuff to now her goal of getting there, and she's single-minded and driven to do this, and she doesn't care what it costs to get to the surface. She's got classic young angst against the system. She riles against the rules, and that's basically who she is. Her mentor is, her title is the Whore, Lily, and she's been exiled to one of the lower levels. She caused great embarrassment and caused the fall of Ava's family. I'll explain that a bit later. And she's supposed to have been dead for a long time, but because of her knowledge in Tai Chi and yoga and martial arts type stretching, she's able to stave off the damage caused by living under the pressures, and she's outlived by four generations anybody, so nobody really knows why she's exiled except for one family, and I'll get to them in a minute. Well and Del are Ava's sidekicks. They're twin brother and sister. They are on the outside too. They follow her kind of without question, the lost puppy dog kind of idea. But since she's gotten this sort of single-mindedness to get out, they're feeling left behind, and they still go with her, but they're less and less likely to just agree. Their father is the head councilman for the whole group, and it's sort of a big man type government. He got it from his father, and his father got it from his father up until the incident that happened with the mentor there. And his family has ruled since. There's another minor council person that gets touched on quite a bit, her Fala councilwoman, and she is a member of the family that used to rule everything and was wronged by this the mentor. And so she's got an axe to grind against this woman. There's another minor character, Kelp. He is a security guard. He harasses the kids because he can. He's a weak kind of person, and he was hurt when he took the test, and he's got a chip on his shoulder, so he just, you know, the bully kind of person. Hinkle, which is the major antagonist, he's a leader from the other side, but when we first meet him, he is just a minor traitor and convinces our main character to get him something to get to his end goal. And then finally, the other last character who's kind of important is the caretaker, and he's the behind-the-scenes disembodied brain who basically is the supercomputer running everything and making sure that everything actually is taken care of and runs behind the scenes. The story is... sort of starts out coming out of the school. We meet, see what MP4 is like. It shows a hierarchy in practice. We meet Ava's father, her mentor on their level, and that whole situation's explained. Then we go to her black market dealings, which she's trying to assemble a suit, and she's found pieces and parts of this suit, which that's her goal. She knows that if she gets all this, she can get out. The last piece that she wants to get, she is forced to steal something from the head security guard of her side, which is a controller of some sort, and that she trades to get what she wants. During the process of all this happening, she inadvertently lets the head preacher church group know that she's been taking training from her mentor. This causes a huge problem because the mentor isn't part of her exile was total isolation, and so she's broken that. So now she's going to be brought to trial, and the trial in MP4 is the gauntlet, and the gauntlet is basically a corridor of death that they have to swim outside of the superstructure and deal with the sea creatures that have evolved over 2,500 years. And Ava takes the place, beats it, but by doing so, she actually jeopardizes her older brothers, who, I explain it in the at the beginning, where her older brothers have to take the test if she takes it because she's the youngest. And so basically, she ostracizes herself from her family, ostracizes herself from the rest of the society because of the mentor, and that night after beating the test, she goes to the other side. While she's on the other side, things are really weird over there, and she comes and finds the caretaker, and he points out that the thing that she stole has allowed the other side to invade her home, and she's met with the dilemma of, does she pursue her goal to going to the surface because she's so close, or does she go back and try and save her side's way of life and her friends and her family? And then she goes over and, you know, kicks ass.
Dude, that's awesome.
The things I need help with, I feel like the controller aspect is a bit weak. I need some ideas onto what should she be taking, what should it do, and like the idea was it opens everything, but that's a little unrealistic. Maybe it can open something major. I don't know. The form of economy, she's doing black market trading. At this point, I'm using salt as a commodity, but I know that that's sort of a weak commodity, so I wanted to try and find something better than that. And then, you know, what you guys do best, the what ifs. What if we did this? What if,
and we totally are down with that, because we I have no doubt.
Absolutely.
That's fabulous. That's probably one of the best presentations we've had, Jay. Done. Well done, sir. Brian, make sure that we're covered. Make sure our ass is covered here with our disclaimer, if you would be so kind.
Sure, sure. Yeah, as brilliant as Dave and I and John are, a lot of what comes out of our mouths, that's going to sound really bad. A lot of what we say is very likely complete and total bullshit. So disregard anything that you don't like. This is your story to do with as you please, and we just appreciate you letting us riff on it.
Well said, sir. Well said. Are we cool with that, Jay?
We're cool.
Awesome. All right. Well, we always defer to our guest host for opening questions, initial impressions and observations. So, Master Miro, if you would be so kind, kick us off. What's your first impression of MP4, Jay's story?
Hey, Jay. First thing, MP4 always makes me think of a music format, but other than that...
Oh, okay.
I was thinking the same thing, dude. That's a good working title, but you might want to find something that doesn't sound like something else.
Yeah, no problem.
It is something that you have some kind of cognitive dissonance, so I just wanted to pop that up. I think it's a great setting for young adult, because it's the troubles of a young person in a hard situation, but it takes it to the extreme. It's under pressure, so to speak.
It's going to be one of those episodes.
I love the idea of the weather apocalypse, but being vague enough, at least at the beginning, that we don't understand whether she's going to her death or whether she's going to freedom. I had a few questions I want to jump into, but my first overwhelming thought was that you set up an excellent, really closed environment that is a real pressure cooker, no pun intended that time. And I like the fact that you've barricaded it off, so it's very much like a Romeo versus Juliet. There's two sides of this family, but there's no escape from the same pressure cooker.
Yeah.
Right. Some of the questions I had were the nature of what happened with her father losing his power, so that this new person, was it Henkel? Henkel's the leader from the other side. The controller is the leader now?
No, the controller is the twins' father's seal. He's a councilman, is the title. But yeah, Ava's family and the seal family and the Falal family were all at one point sort of at the top. And this lady, the mentor, she has an affair that kind of causes a big riff, and she betrays the Falal group with Ava's family, and the punishment is Ava's family falls from grace. It sort of breaks, everybody knows what happened, and they lose all kind of credibility, and they're sort of banished down. The idea is every level has a family, and every family has a role to play within the dome. And they're either, whether they're doing water treatment or they're doing food collection or they're doing waste recycling or that sort of thing. And the lowest sort of place to be is the food collection, and that's where her family gets sent. So they're at the bottom, whereas this the councilman people, they stay at the top, and they sort of live almost on the surface kind of idea. And the nature of the problem is she's betrayed trust. Well, they just want to get rid of her, I guess.
I think if you're in a very closed environment, established orders are going to be very important, because you're in a... Yeah. This place is created as a last bastion with the automation that's been perfected, as you said, and a computer, much like the man behind the curtain in Oz, that runs things. And you can't break the system. And there's probably, over the generations, a very strong cultural imperative, don't rock the boat.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. And, when I say society breaks down, because of the short lifespan, people are easier to manipulate. And I thought in that kind of an environment, a government type group would want to keep the people ignorant and less informed so that they have more control.
I also like that really plays into the fact that every group learns a skill. so that nobody has the skills to control all the groups. And perhaps that's one of Eva's sins. Her anarchy extends to the fact that she's not a specialist.
Right.
And that could be very threatening. And people that are young and ignorant like to make fun of what is threatening.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. A couple last questions. The caretaker, is it playing games, or is it actually doing its best, or is that something critical that comes out in the last act?
He's gone so far, all he cares about is maintaining specimens for the possible future repopulation of the planet. He is very much concerned with just maintaining enough genetic material to start mankind and not go again. He's from the beginning. His body failed, and the scientists were able to remove him and keep him going. But he ultimately has no feelings. He doesn't really care what happens anymore. He's lost his human connection with the people that he sort of takes care of. And really, he doesn't. As long as somebody's alive, he doesn't really care.
Okay, he's Beastie Boys from Futurama with a beard.
There you go.
Thanks for summing that up, John. That's awesome.
Okay, that's great. Now, my last question is he loved and revered or feared?
He is unknown. They don't know about him.
Okay.
It's behind the scenes, literally. He has some caretakers, the people that do his bidding. He sends to do sort of behind the scenes work, and in construction of the dome at the beginning, and because of the short life cycle, everyone's forgotten, maintenance corridors and stuff were built on the outside of the levels where the people inside can't see. And that's where sort of the outside of the hamster maze, they're doing all the fixing. And he sort of organizes and tells those people what to do, but nobody in the dome or in the anarchy side actually know he exists. He's a rumor or a myth, and so are his caretakers.
Interesting. And the last, I lied. One more last question. I do that. I lie. Canadian.
You lie.
No, so are you. So you're used to me lying. What is the status of the rebel forces? Are they being fought in an open warfare? Is there a detente that is very easily flared up? Or have they made peace and it's just they've cut them off and they have to try to survive any way they can?
I sort of have it structured as the anarchy side, to the general public, is held at bay by the might of the council. And on the sub side that they don't know about is the reality is the council's paying them off to stay out. And they're using that currency, and they have hidden sources of finding that currency that the people don't know about, and they're just paying them to stay away. And the anarchy side is content with that at this point because they want to have an assured victory, and they don't feel like they can just go in and totally take over. They have to have an edge, and that's the controller or the item that they get our main character to go and steal.
Henkel or Hinkle, he's masquerading as a minor trader. Right. He's someone that Ava's had contact with before.
Yeah, he's looking for the person to get him what he wants, and he comes across this girl who single-mindedly wants one thing. She wants parts to this suit, and he's like, oh, no problem. So he plays her along, and he gets her parts, and it's harder and harder to find, and eventually gets her to the point where she's willing to pretty much do whatever she's got to do to get the last bit. And that's when he drops the bombshell and says, well, if you want this, you got to go here and steal this.
Cool. Okay, I've got everything I need for now. I have some questions, but I'll come back to it and defer to the hosts.
Awesome. Very cool. Brian, what you got, bud?
I have a few more questions. The gauntlet that she runs in place of the mentor, is that the same as you said something about a test that she passes that allows her to go to the other side. Is that the same thing?
Right. Yeah. So the society, the idea was the society is survival of the fittest, and the fit should be allowed to be to vote. Only the fit should be allowed to procreate and make decisions. So they send them through this gauntlet, and if they come out on the other side of the gauntlet, they're now vetted. They have a rights. They have they're people, and so at 16 they're eligible for the test, and they have up to 2 years to take the test. And at the 2 year mark, they're thrown into the chamber and sent out. So you know you could practice or try and get as best as you could in that 2 year period. And the test is for murder, is for anything. If you've broken the law and you need to prove yourself worthy, you go through the test again.
Oh, okay.
And it's a constantly changing gauntlet, right? The idea is that it's open to the ocean. So 2,500 years of under the ice cap kind of evolution of sea creatures will probably develop some pretty interesting monsters in my mind.
Yeah, now, does this mean that they have very capable suits that can get them out, but they're very carefully controlled, or...
Yeah, like I've written some of it already, and the main scene where you're introduced to the test, the character goes out and is slaughtered by the sea creatures, and he's outfitted with a belt. Ultimately, all they need to wear to go out there is this helmet and this belt that goes around, and the helmet filters the air, oxygen, water, so they can breathe, and the belt is when they die, they can hit the button and electrify the water and push away the creature so they can go back out and get the helmet and get the belt and leave the body kind of thing.
Wow.
When they hit the button in the storyline, all the creatures leave, they go out to get the body, and it wasn't as effective as they intended, and the creatures come after them and get a few of them. And that sort of leads into more and more of, it sort of gets her into the trap. The church... I'll stop for it. I'll let you ask questions and then I'll get to that point. Sorry. Got the danger of just going on and on.
Right. Yeah, no worries. So that kind of leads to something that I was thinking about, the caretaker. And if the caretaker has become a little bit, not necessarily jaded, but, you know, he's got a one-track mind, so to speak, because he is just a mind. If he wants to just maintain mankind, so to speak, then is he starting to get the idea that he wants only the best specimens to continue on, and that this test, or if he's created this, or sort of pushed society in this direction, that it's his way of filtering out the less desirables?
Yeah, he's sort of maintaining the norm, the status quo. They realized that they were exponentially growing as people, and they only had so much room to grow. So the idea was, is they wanted the healthiest and the strongest minds and the quickest to survive. So put them in an environment where they have to do that. And so the idea is that they put them in this test. If they make it through, well, clearly they've got genetic material that we want to keep.
Right. Now, what about the children from the better side? Do they still have to do the test?
The children from the better side. Oh, yeah. The better side's the one with the gauntlet. And yeah, when they hit 16, they're eligible. And they have until 18 to go out there and do it. Once they hit 18, they're forced by the society to go and take the test. And of course, there's good times and bad times to take it, as you know, the tides in, tides out kind of idea. But that's all sort of behind the scenes conversation between characters and such.
Okay. And are there wealthier families that maybe have better suits?
Yeah. Yes and no. There's wealthier families that have more knowledge, and the higher the family goes, the more they actually know, and the lowest of the low are very dumb in the knowledge of why they're there. They don't even know that mankind had cities and cars and planes. That's not even a myth to them anymore. But the upper levels of the council, they are well aware of where mankind was and how they got to where they are. And
Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, and just one more real quick thing, and this is one of those things that you can absolutely disregard, but I just had a thought that since so much time has passed, it might be cool for them not to remember why it's called NP4.
Yeah.
And they may even call it something like Empty Floor, or, you know, just something that sounds similar, that almost an Ellis Island kind of thing, where
then you can have that great reveal when they wipe away a sign and it's the actual name of the place,
and they realize what it is.
Absolutely. I actually had the intention of the caretaker in his meeting with Ava at the end to say, well, you know, I got seven other domes that I'm sort of trying to take care of, but they're failing, and this is where our last chance. And then he explains to her how they ended up where they are.
Yeah. Because that gives you a great reveal of information and helps you avoid kind of an info dump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Jay, I just have some quick questions and then some longer ones.
No problem.
What a shock. First of all, just a suggestion. The shortened lifespan due to the pressure – that they're in. I would check with a scientist, biologist on that. I just to make sure that if and you can come up with all kinds of different ways why lifespan is shortened.
Dirty air is my favorite.
Yeah, dirty air, ineffective or less nutritious food, disease, genetics. Holy crap, 2,500 years. Yeah.
But and it sounds very plausible, but nailing that down.
The more you don't nail it down is probably there are a number of factors that you can explain as contributing, but not everybody can probably know because there's not any medical families that are being big characters in your story.
Right. Sure.
Unless it becomes relevant to the story in some way, in which case you got to know.
Right. So. I do have the mentor cultivating her own garden, sort of growing her own herbs and mushrooms and et cetera that she sort of kept. I agree. Cause there's other factors other than,
just a thought, just something to pour some thoughts into. Do you have any idea what happened to the world?
Well, it got cold.
It got cold. Okay.
Somebody turned out the sun. It's that thought. I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and they told us that the world's going to freeze. We're going to go into another ice age.
Okay.
I know that historically in the geological record, they can prove we've had several ice ages. So I thought that an ice age would be a good excuse to try and get as close to the heat source as possible, thus going towards the Earth's core.
So ultimately, if anybody escapes, if Ava succeeds in her desire to escape and go up on land, she's toast.
Not necessarily. The ice age might be receding at that point.
Very cool. Good. And that's something to discuss as well. Tell me, what population do you see in this dome? How many people are in here, including the anarchists and the non-anarchists?
I don't know. I hadn't put much thought into how many people. It could be ginormous. I describe the levels as only going down to, like, say, the 22nd level below ground, and then, of course, the dome on top. But, yeah, I hadn't really thought of what ultimately the population would be, but I think it would have to be, you know, at least 8,000 to 10,000 people the minimum.
Okay, yeah, because you've got economy, you've got a social structure, you've got trade.
Yeah.
So those all seem to imply, you know, a strata of society, which you can't have unless you've got a lot of people.
Right.
I ask that purely as a defining element to inform the discussion. So, okay, cool. Now, tell me more about you've got the anarchists on one side. What's the name of the people on the other side?
Oh, I hadn't given them a name.
Okay. I would imagine.
We haven't got over there yet.
I would imagine they identify themselves as something.
As
John pointed out, you've got this great pressure cooker going on. You've got these rules and structures, which kind of implies labels and names.
Yeah.
Something to identify them would be cool. Where do the anarchists come from?
Well, they come from, they're the result of the Civil War. They're the half of the population that didn't want to partake in population regulation.
Okay.
Said no, we're not going to go do that. That's crazy. That you're nuts. We're not doing that.
Okay.
So we're going to make you, and they said nah. So.
And how long ago was the Civil War?
The Civil War was pretty much a couple of years after the first generation of mines sort of failed. So I would say two or three generations in.
Oh wow.
Maybe.
Okay.
So it's been separated for a long time, and the idea that I had that is Ava's side has deteriorated over this period of time of survival of the fittest, and there are less people than on the anarchy side because it's just, you know, it's really ridiculous to think of putting, you know, every single person through this gauntlet, and as you know, less and less predators outside, you know, it's getting more and more dangerous.
Wanted to plant a seed of what, this isn't really a what if, but just a possibility. The notion of a person who is 16 years of age being thrown out to be eaten by fish or survive. And having 2 years to think about that and really ponder the fact that, oh, crap, unless I'm perfect, I'm going to die. I'm wondering if some of those people that say, screw this, there ain't no way I'm going out where the monsters are. I wonder if they defect over to the anarchist side.
Yeah, I definitely.
I wonder if there's like almost an underground railroad kind of thing. No, well, seriously.
Not rosy cheeks and happy faces either, though. That side's ruled by the same sort of survival of the fittest, but man versus man and woman versus woman.
Which would, if to an 18-year-old, would be better odds than a 300-foot squid.
That's true. Right. That's true.
So I'm thinking, and also, yeah. You know, the anarchists, you don't want, I would caution you against painting your characters in one shade. Right. The anarchists may not be bad. They're certainly a threat to the good guys. But, you know, maybe they're doing an underground railroad to get some of these kids out of here because they, you know, maybe they're the good guys. You know,
yeah. Can I throw something in here too?
Yeah.
What I really think is interesting here is, I agree. First of all, they have to be. Oh God, I can't believe I'm going to use this expression. Shades of gray on both sides.
Yeah.
But what you need to consider as a very possible jewel in the rough to look at is you've got a mentor who I think is probably one of the wisest and smartest characters. She can't be the only one. There has to be another underground, maybe with more history that they're maintaining, maybe with more understanding, maybe the fact that she's mentoring a child, granted because she lost, she caused the downfall of their family. Why was she with that family? It sounds like this is kind of a power behind the throne, perhaps a guiding force with positive intentions that you could use to tease out some of the story. And I was, from the very beginning of your description, most interested in, she's more interesting than Jackie Chan in The Karate Kid, but she's got a Mr. Miyagi vibe, and I get the sense that there's got to be a little more than just one isolated person with a garden.
I agree.
In that
right.
Third
yeah,
strand.
I agree. Yeah. And you're right. The mentors is right now competing with the main protagonist for interest and captivating reader attention.
Yeah, I really like that character. She was she fleshed out really well. Sort of her backstory there was that she was a member of the Falal family, and she her adultery, hence why she's got the title of the whore, was the reason why she was sort of kicked out and sent away. And then by being isolated, I kind of thought that, you know, if she wasn't allowed to talk to anybody and wasn't officially allowed to be a person, she'd have nothing better to do than to try and contemplate life, figure things out, and kind of self-reflection.
Okay, so your mentor has a she's got a kind of a scarlet letter with the rest of society, but you've made a very careful point that after 2,000 years, she could find the seeds and the know-how to grow a garden. There has to be.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and to me, that's my oh wow moment so far is, you know, at the end of the story, instead of going up, Ava decides to become one of these people that, though never acknowledged, is helping keep society together.
Yeah. Yeah, that's.
I'll shut up.
Yeah, no, that's sort of what I wanted. I wanted to take someone who doesn't agree with society and put them into a position where they make the decision to become someone who supports it. Yeah, that's where I'm sort of going. So perfect. Yeah. Awesome.
Let's talk.
Canadians, we can do this.
You are. Oh my God, you guys, you got donuts and this.
Mind
this
control.
Freaking amazing. Holy crap.
Yeah, you got to have a Tim Hortons.
Oh, see, Brian, we are so outclassed here. We'll try and hold our own as we go forward.
That's right.
I want to talk about Ava's archetype a little bit, Jay. Because I'm wondering, she seems to be either A, the potential savior of the culture, or its destroyer. And I'm curious if you've given any thought to thematically how you see her moving. What is her issue? Where did it come from? And how do you see it being resolved?
I sort of had her in the mind of a character who doesn't believe everything she's told. And I kind of thought that I kind of have it so that what they're being taught in school sort of being, oh, well, you have to do it this way because of this. They've made up whatever excuses they've had to make up to get them to follow and toe the line. And I just had her as somebody who doesn't buy it.
Okay.
I call your cards. I call your bluff. Show me what you got.
What about this? What about, you know, if we rock the idea that the anarchists, even though the propaganda from the ordered side is, of course, they're savages. They eat each other. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Maybe if we go with the angle that, you know, nobody is purely what somebody else says they are. and maybe they have in the past rescued some of these youngsters from the civilized side. Maybe mercenary wise, you know, we'll get you out. You won't have to run the gauntlet if you bring us some very cool shovels and a couple of air processors.
Right.
You know, some sort of black market shady deal, but we'll get you out. And maybe the Ava's suspicions, while have been sitting there for a while, maybe the inciting event that galvanizes her and says, oh, screw this, is that she discovers one of these. Maybe one of her friends is being primed for the gauntlet, and he does not want to go. Maybe he is clearly not somebody who can survive such a horrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
And she somehow discovers that he's actually going to go over to the other side.
Okay.
And has an...
Yeah, to cement that before it actually comes up.
Right.
Doesn't matter what his fate is so much as that it sets up the paths for the reader.
Right. Right. Okay.
And so she sees one of these hideous flesh-eating savages and, oh crap, not only is he not a hideous flesh-eating savage, but, you know, he looks fairly well-nourished. You know, maybe they've got hydroponics over there. Maybe right. They've found, through their own anarchy, through their own civil war, their own way of finding their own equilibrium. And you know, holy crap, there's your title. Equilibrium? Well, no, that's already been done. But
Christian, no, it's fine. You go...
How do you spell that?
Yeah, lots of B's.
That's right.
But I mean, it seems like a theme that's coming out here is balance and harmony with under the incredible pressure. The more pressure you apply, the more important it is to be in balance. Otherwise, one step off that main line and the crushing pressure destroys everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just from a thematic standpoint, that's kind of cool and something that you could infuse in Ava, you know, desiring to understand, to believe, to want to know, and not seeing that in her current world.
Mm-hmm.
And having this inciting incident suddenly galvanize and say, holy crap, there's more going on. You know, I'd love to see in the arc of the story an exploration of the anarchists rather than just being the other. I think if this is a standalone story, and I think it stands beautifully as it does, I haven't said that yet, but holy crap, Jay, this is freaking awesome. This is sweetness. I'd like to see an exploration of the anarchists and what they're doing and how they got there as a part of Ava's exploration. I don't think you can get away without giving some kind of nod and fulfillment of curiosity on the reader's part of what's going on the other side of that bulkhead.
Mm. Yeah. Right.
So.
Okay.
I do think also that there needs to be some tension along the lines of not necessarily like racial, you know, we hate you, you hate us, to a huge extent, but that, you know, when Dave brought up you have the anarchists and what is the other side called, I would say even more important is what do the anarchists call the other side? Yeah. And then when she does deal with them, there's going to be some hatred, there's going to be some
prejudice.
Thank you, that's the word that I was looking for. And you know, how she overcomes that, not just in terms of how they view her, but how she views them and everything that she's been told about them, because you say she doesn't believe everything that she's taught in school, and I'm sure that there is going to be something that is presented to her about the other side because of the, you know, any time that you have two sides, there's always us versus them.
Right. Right.
And I think that could be a big part of a lot of pushing her motivation forward.
Okay.
Very cool.
Within that. Yeah.
John, what else you got, son?
I have two cautions. The gauntlet and the way she substitutes, sacrifices herself in the place of someone she cares about.
Are you going to invoke Hunger Games?
I was.
You got to be careful, brother. You got to be careful because there's homage, and then there's people are going to say, but also, whether they think of it or not, it seems maybe I like the way we're thinking of other ways to get her involved in the other side, and other ways to get her. It almost seems extraneous. Yeah. I think if somebody else died in this, that would be enough to illustrate, hell no, I don't want to run that. I want to get out. And maybe that gives her a timetable.
We switched over to Logan's Run now.
Well, carousel, I have to get out of here before they throw me out an airlock. Nobody likes me anyways. I've just had a run-in with the law, and they're like, hey, guys, keep an eye on the clock. Let's get rid of her as soon as possible.
So instead of her wanting to challenge the test and go past it, to in the other way, to run away from it, to try and not go through it?
Yes, or maybe having to go through some sort of preparation or, here is your belt. Here is how you will use it. Indoctrination with a bunch of other kids can lead her to not only have a timetable for when she needs to act by, but it's the crucible to make her really consider what's going on. And also, I think at this point, the mentor would be pulling her teeth out and trying to get through to her about how she's got to really, she's running out of time. She knows that she's playing a game. Is she the mentor involved in?
Sorry, that's working just a that, Joss Whedon
thing.
Working
I can't
that.
Turn that down. is that going to be something that she's involved with, the mentor? Is she part of this black market, gray market? Does she know who Hinkle really is? Why would she not say if she does? And to me, it seems like you don't even need that. You don't need her to go out there and face the octopuses because they're not the big threat. The big threat is the people.
Well, and one of the themes that we constantly run into is the notion of an aggressive, active protagonist. You know, having the mentor, just to rock that a little farther, tossed out in there is kind of forcing your protagonist's hand, whereas giving her a very specific choice and taking a firm action of not only am I not going out there, but I'm going to find a new way of doing this. I'm going to find out what's going on. I'm going to find the truth. Now you've got an active, aggressive protagonist that's making conscious choices rather than reacting to what's happening around her.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I kind of feel like I'd like to see a really strong antagonist that, you know, if she's fighting back, if she's disbelieving everything and she's actually sowing some kind of discord, that maybe there's somebody who pushes her toward the gauntlet faster. And it's, we need to get rid of her. We need to get her out there now. And then the people that she wants, you know, she wants to get across to the other side, maybe they can't smuggle her across. There's too much attention on her. She's going to have to go through the gauntlet. And so the only way that they can get her to the other side is to help her survive it by giving her the instructions on how to put this thing together and find the pieces. If you wanted to still have the gauntlet in there, because I like the idea of
you it's want a cool her to idea. Be fish
food. I want her to go through the gauntlet. But if it's something where she's not going to have a choice, now she has to find a way to survive it, and then the mentor can come in on that. The other side can help her get through.
Oh my god, oh my god, oh my god.
What you got?
Too many what if moments.
Do it, do it. You got one?
You got too much time for her to go through this gauntlet. She knows. Here's the thing. If I am the person who knows I want her dead,
right?
What's going to stop me from looking the other way and accidentally dropping my elbow on the button when she's halfway through the course? So I think if I was her, somebody would hint that's going to happen or has happened in the past. Mm-hmm. The people that are going to survive, oh, look, fish food. So maybe she leaves before the spectacle. Maybe if you want that gauntlet, she runs it before people turn on the lights and look out the window.
Awesome.
Oh, no, sees the truth of it. Yes.
Right.
Yes. That's fabulous. Jay, what do you think of that?
Yeah. No, that's, yeah. I like that. I'm sorry. I'm trying to get my mind around. I've had her in my head so much wanting to tackle this whole thing. Now I'm trying to go the other way and go, okay, so how
we bring
that work?
A creative sledgehammer to those entrenched notions, my friend.
Okay, well, maybe instead of getting to the finish line, she runs the gauntlet so she can get to another access hatch on the other side.
I did have that thought, but
I like that
the way my story arc was going with her sort of taking the place. I was like, well, okay, so she's going to go and take the test and then she's just going to book it. Like, that kind of leaves people hanging. But that is definitely an idea of going accessing the other side from the outside.
Well, you see, this is like the future driver test. You're 16. Yeah. You have to take your driving exam now.
Yeah. Right. And you may die.
And then if she does that and the side that wants her dead, or at least the people who want her dead, don't know that she survived it, then she has an edge later if there is going to be any kind of
anarchist
seeking out or she's dead. Rebellion there kind of thing, you know?
Nice. Mm. Nice. Yeah. I like it. Okay, I've got one.
Jump in, Dave, jump in.
Okay, so try this on for size. The caretaker. You had mentioned and you tweaked something for me when you were describing the caretaker gathering DNA samples and so on and so forth.
Oh, you bastard.
Go. Yes, I'm taking it. It's mine. I got it. So the caretaker, who has reduced himself down to, I'm just gathering all the best DNA for humanity, what if he's moving towards an endgame where he no longer needs the dome?
Oh.
What if he has gathered enough DNA?
Or he's about to.
Or, yes, exactly. Is about to gather all of the elements, and not just human DNA, but also plant DNA and fish DNA, and maybe he's got a gene resequencer in there, and he's making an ark.
Oh.
He's making an ark to reseed the plant. That was his objective all along. And the whole purpose of this whole dome experience was simply to harvest and draw upon the best of humanity to create this ark. And now, with just a few more DNA samples and a couple of pieces of equipment, the caretaker is going to shut down the dome.
Totally. Oh.
He's a week away from actually pulling the drain out.
Yes. And, I'm sorry, Brian, did you have something?
Well, I was just going to say, with so many years of creative breeding of these people, he's got, you know, the creme de la creme of DNA. Right.
Which means the caretaker has been speaking to the overlords of the regimented city, guiding them along a selective breeding path.
Okay.
Now, that makes adultery a heinous crime.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, suddenly, the ment whore has committed a crime against the caretaker.
Oh.
And what if her crime is even greater than that? What if she discovered the truth of what he's done?
Yeah.
So all the propaganda, all the stuff, all this stuff that people are saying, I mean, this whole thing is illusion. I mean, the notion that anarchists are flesh-eating savages. The notion that the mentor was a whore and betrayed the family. No, she found the truth. And here's one more thing. You were talking about the suit that she's building.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. What if she's not building it? What if she found it and she's repairing it? What if it's the last piece of equipment that the caretaker needs? And what if the thing that Ava needs to make it go is a navigation module of the above world that Lily, the whore, stole during her transgression?
Oh.
What she's needed all along has been under her pillow the whole time, and she didn't know it, or in the treasure box beside her bed.
And just one more thing, just to totally, totally fuck things up. What if Lily, the mentor, was a lover of Hinkle's? And Hinkle stole the component.
There's so many rabbit holes. You got to pick the ones you like.
I know, exactly. Right? Exactly. Yeah. I'm totally going overboard here.
That would force, unfortunately, that one would force the Hinkle character to be much, much older than I kind of.
Yeah, and that ain't going to fly. Yeah. That ain't going to fly. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so.
Unless she's a hot
caveat, ignore us all where it fits. You know your story.
Exactly. But exactly.
Sure. No, but I definitely like that possibility.
If we're talking about a character. Just riffing on the whole idea that maybe this was a genetic experiment and her family used to be top of the heap and they wanted their daughter to be the best person to survive this gauntlet and maybe the best person to lead. What if her father actually tweaked her DNA to make her better?
Oh, dude.
Yeah, totally.
What if that makes her the person who can understand suits again when everybody's dumbed down, who's got an innate ability so much? She's Doc Savage among the savages.
She's Neo.
Yeah. There's your Matrix. Well, she's been viewed with so much more ability and DNA and abilities to eat better, breathe better, do everything just that little bit better.
Which is why the mentor found her and is training her, because the father doesn't hate her. He hopes his daughter will ascend.
It's set up banishment.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right. So yes, exactly. A set up banishment so that the training could take place in secret, out of the away from the prying eye of the caretaker.
And so there was no affair. It was all yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Now, hey, Jay, you want to talk about your story a little?
Jay, what this does, what I'm seeing this does, and again, yes, John is absolutely right. This is totally your story. But if the arc of the instigating event, opening of the door to the antagonists, discovery and exploration of the antagonist people, the revelation of the caretaker's nefarious plot. There's one epic crisis right there, is that the caretaker must be defeated because he's going to destroy it. They defeat the caretaker, but the clock is still ticking. Something has happened that's compromised the integrity of the dome. And now, Ava has the key to saving humanity. And now they can take the Ark and the surviving people somehow and begin a brave new world on the world that is no longer, no longer under the Ice Age or coming out of the Ice Age.
Right.
That's a heroic frickin' arc, man.
Yeah. You see what you did there, arc and arc, yeah.
Okay, guys, I'm seeing the clock ticking, man, and yep. And God, we could just keep talking about this because it's so awesome. But let's try and start wrapping it up and give John final words of advice, suggestions, and words of wisdom. Be the mentor. And help Jay one last time.
Jay, I love that you've made this a standalone story, and I love that that means you can throw it all out in the final act.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
There's too many people trying to write a trilogy because that's what sells, like me. Yeah. But what I really like about this is the small characters. I want to know how her two friends that follow her along end up feeling betrayed. I want to see how Kelp, the security guard, who's weak and hurt when he took the test, perhaps makes that transition from chip on the shoulder and hounding the kids to doing that one thing that leads to a great outcome where it was sure to be defeat before. Yes. I want to see how a lot of the people who are supposedly dumbed down, savage, and on their way out have that one moment of nobility. Because this story starts when you're coming out of school and the hierarchy is explained. And I want to see more than, especially if I like the idea of making her more than everyone else, but I want to see everybody showing that one flare of humanity that everybody assumed was doused beneath the sea. And nice. On the bottom thing I want to say is I really love the idea. I really love the setup. Don't get caught in any specific action pieces. Like I was saying before, put the pieces on the table, see how they fit, and then follow it through to wherever your story and the characters you've created take the action.
Yes.
Yeah, I definitely like to. I have a story arc, and I had a story line printed, and as I started to write, the story took on a life of its own and went in its own direction. So yeah, I agree with just letting the story tell itself to the author. I like that kind of concept.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. Brian, final words for Jay?
Yeah, I think everything that John just said was brilliant, and there's no way that I can follow that up. So I have one more thing that I want to say about the caretaker in the suits, just another thought, is that if he's collecting DNA, and if you do go the route where he's trying to collect the best and the brightest, then I see the gauntlet being selective, and I see somebody pulling strings behind the scene where, you know, you might have somebody who's absolutely brilliant, but not very athletic, and he wants that DNA. And so maybe there's another thing that sends out an electric shock that keeps all the giant fish away. Cause, even the best and the brightest and the most athletic could be swallowed by a big fucking fish. So
there's your title.
Swallowed by big fucking fish.
So I just think that maybe that's one of the reveals. One of the things that she discovers along the way is that it is selective, and it is, you know, everybody thinks that these kids are really being tested, and it's all rigged. And so the ones that they don't want are being sacrificed, and she has to get past that because she knows that they don't want her to succeed.
Yeah. And
so, but beyond that, I do want to echo that this is super, super rich and
fertile ground.
Yeah. Yes.
And whatever direction you decide to go with this, it's going to be fabulous. So,
yeah. Yeah. And yeah. I will jump in there and affirm. And thank you, John, for drawing the attention back to the characters.
Yes.
And definitely I would love for you to focus on Ava and make her right now. We've got some bright lights on her that are kind of,
but we like the whore.
You like the whore, John. either elevate her to that full protagonist role and give her that attention that she so richly deserves, or maybe it's a shared thing. Maybe instead of focusing on Ava as the primary protagonist, maybe this is a shared protagonism. Can you say that? Is that real? Okay.
Well,
maybe it is Lily and Ava and her father. Maybe, there's a richer storyline there. And again, going back to what John said, put those set pieces out there and see how they fit together. Let that creative mind that created this awesome set piece, then let it play in there a little bit with these characters in particular, And, right. As Nathan says, butts in seats, baby. Start writing and see where it goes. So definitely awesomeness. Now, Jay, was there anything that we didn't cover or address specifically or any question you had specifically for John?
No, the only thing that we really, what is the currency? What should I be using for them to be using as their trade base?
Yeah.
What's valuable? Like,
it has to be script. It almost has to be a representation. Because resources in the underworld.
Oh, I've got something. There was a TED talk just in the last couple of weeks about how there was a technology where reverse osmosis costs a lot of money. They're now saying Singapore has a prospected mineral economy of billions of dollars in the upcoming year because there is a bacteria that takes the output of reverse osmosis, which is a process where you get clean drinkable water, and it squeezes out the rest. The rest is called a salt brine or a sea brine. And you can put a bacteria in that they've got in a lab now that very efficiently and very quickly will metabolize metals, alloys. And it precipitates, draws them out, dunks to the bottom. You're not going to have a problem in any sea economy in 100 years with getting minerals literally out of water. So metals are going to be cheap. So you have like plutonium, titanium. It's like junk around here.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So awesome. Why not make the useless coins something that to us is like, oh my God, if I had five of those, I'd be rich. And to them, it means nothing. So that kind of turns it on its head.
Sure. Okay. Sure. Yeah. And God, brilliant. Yeah. And just spend some time at TED because holy crap, that's a inspiration zone right there.
Oh, tell me about it. I have to be careful though. I have a limited amount of time to which to try and listen to everything that I listen to.
I hear you. Jay, we always exact a vow of all of our guest hosts that when you do write this story and it soars to the top of whatever fiction list it's going to appear on, because it will, that you come back to us and let us know so that we can sing your praises and plaster your name on the great golden alchemical wall of fame. Will you do that for us, sir?
Absolutely.
Excellent.
Fabulous.
Excellent. Wow. Whew, that was fun. That was a lot of fun. John, thank you so much for not only making the time, but holy crap, throwing out gold, diamonds, a little plutonium, and just some general awesomeness out there. This has been a blast, man. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. A lot of fun.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, guys. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Jay, and back at you, man. The workshoppers, much respect to the people that bring up the stories, man. And this one was killer. Outstanding. Yeah. Outstanding.
Cool. Thank you.
And as long as we're saying thank you, dear friends who have tuned in, thank you. We hope that you had as much fun as we did with this one. If you've got more ideas for Good Master Jay, and I'm betting I can hear Brian Lincoln. Brian Lincoln already at the keyboard going, oh yeah, I got something for you. But if you have ideas for Jay, pop them up on the comments for the post. I'm thinking, holy crap, Brian, we really need a message board. We need a forum.
We do. We've got to get it set up.
I need to find that time. Where does that time come from? I don't know. but leave a comment for Jay. drop a line to us at thetable@roundtablepodcast.com. If you're full of squee like we are right now, then share some of that squee out at iTunes and buy us a cup of coffee, the moral equivalent thereof, by dropping a review up there. We'd love that, yes. Too. Yep. Brian, any final words as we draw this epic episode to a close?
This was fabulous. And now that it's over, go right.
Go right. Absolutely.
Go right.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Friends, you find what you're looking for, so look for awesomeness. Look for amazing. It's inside your heart. It's right around the corner. Go dig it up, put it on paper, and then bring it onto the round table, and we'll workshop that bad boy for you. Stay tuned next week, a few days, and we'll have another guest host, more showcases, more workshopping, more mind-blowing creativity at your fingertips, one play button away. Thank you guys for tuning in. We will talk to you soon. Until then, take care and be amazing.
That's right.
We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This episode is copyrighted 2012 by the Roundtable Podcast and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. That means don't sell it, but you can share it all you like. And you can even use pieces of it in your own derivative work, as long as you attribute us as the source and release the work under the same licensing terms. Theme music composed and performed by the talented Hepcats of Brotown, Gary Gold, David LaBroyere, Billy Nobel, and Matt O'Donnell. If you'd like to be a guest writer or guest host, or learn more about the Roundtable Podcast, please visit our website at www.roundtablepodcast.com or visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/roundtablepodcast. Our Twitter tag is @writerspodcast, or just send us an email at thetable@roundtablepodcast.com. Thanks for listening.